What I'm going to try to do, my assignment was to summarize a little bit sort of our thinking and what we're doing in the Northeast as far as nitrogen recommendations, and then talk a little bit about some of the things that we've been thinking about there. We have a very active group in the Northeast working on a wide range of fertility issues, and all these people contributed something to this presentation from the different states. We're not quite to the point where John described in the Midwest with having some formalized regional approach, but we are talking about it, so I hope to let you know where we're at and talk a little bit about what we're talking about. In general, in the Northeast, we use a recommendation system that is based on yield goal. We're still using that. Most states make adjustments, obviously, for things like previous legumes, adjustments for residual manure. Some states make additional adjustments based on some soil nitrogen. Most states recommend side dressing, and we do pretty much throughout the Northeast recommend using tests like the PSNT and the chlorophyll meter. And the stock nitrate test has become widely accepted in the Northeast. It's gaining a lot of attention as a way to get some good feedback on nitrogen recommendations and our practices. We can look at that at the end and really see how good a job we did and use that as a guide for making some adjustments. Just to use Pennsylvania as an example quickly of how most of the states do this, and I'll talk about a few of the variations that occur. We use basically a 1 pound per bushel as our base recommendation. This is purely an empirical relationship related to our field estimates of economic optimum N rate from a lot of research plots, primarily that Dick Fox did for about 30 years. This accounts in the sort of the empirical black box. It accounts for the contribution from the soil organic matter, and it accounts for any efficiency because it is just an empirical relationship. We do make adjustments for economics because it is based on economic optimum N rate. So, for example, when N prices went up before the nitrogen prices really, or when N prices up before the corn went up, we did put out an extension bulletin with adjustments for the different economics. Actually, right now we're pretty much back where we were as far as the price ratio, so we're back to our pretty much 10-to-1 economics. We do make credits in Pennsylvania. We have tables of nitrogen credits for legumes, and most states have a similar table. Our credits, for example, for alfalfa range from 40 to 120 pounds of N, depending on the stand and the soil productivity group. We make a 1 pound per bushel credit for soybeans. We also make a credit for previous manure applications, just using a decay series based on the amount of organic nitrogen we apply in the manure. So most states, the numbers vary from state to state, but most of the states in the Northeast are following this sort of general approach. Just example, here's our table we use for the legumes. Most of us have a table like that. And when we talk about estimating the manure, we have a table here where we can look at the contribution from previous organic N contributions from manure plus what we're applying in the given year. As I said, most of us use the PSNT. This is basically the Pennsylvania procedure, but it's pretty much standard where we're sampling just prior to side dressing. One of the big strengths of the PSNT is this critical level. It's very good at telling us whether or not we can expect a response. And that works very well, and it's amazing, really, not just in the Northeast but across the country, how constant this critical level is. It just falls in that low 20s no matter where you're at. If we get a site that the test says will respond, we do use it to make a side dress recommendation, but we know that's the weakness of the test. It doesn't do a great job. And that gets a lot of criticism. A lot of people criticize PSNT and say, well, it doesn't work because we can't predict a good recommendation. One of the things that Dick Fox did several years ago before he retired is he took a whole bunch of his data and just compared. And you can see down here at the bottom, this is our little scheme for making recommendations with the PSNT, but just regressing the economic optimum N rate that he measured in his experiments with our PSNT recommendation, R squared was 0.51. So we've made it over a coin toss, you know. We're just barely over that 50-50. That's not very good, but we also used sort of the traditional approach of, you know, starting with a base recommendation, adjusting for residual manure, adjusting for legumes, and all these kind of things. And that R squared was 0.29. Neither one is good. You know, we can't do a very good job at making a nitrogen recommendation, but the test, you know, we're twice as good with the test. So in our opinion, you know, we'll take what we can get. Even though we know it's not great, if the PSNT can help us do a little bit better job, I think that's worth using. So I think sometimes we've got to put these things in perspectives. It may not fit our ideal idea of what way it ought to work, but there is some merit there. Another test that's used, it's chlorophyll meter test, pretty much the same as a PSNT, a pre-side dress test. One of the issues with this is really, with all these plant tests, we often need to have some kind of a reference because it's just looking at greenness. So having a high-end reference area there, when we compare the high-end reference area to the rest of the field, we can do a pretty good job predicting whether or not we'll get a response. Our data in Pennsylvania, for example, we get about the same level with the chlorophyll meter test with the high-end reference as we do with the PSNT. So both of them do a decent job of predicting whether or not we'll get a response, and both of them don't do a great job with recommendations, but they do help a little bit with recommendations. One of the things we've worked on, nobody likes putting out that high-end reference plot because you've got to plan ahead. People don't really like to plan ahead. So you got to have that in the field. They'd rather just be able to go in the lane and jump in, out of the truck and run out in the field and take a reading for the farmer. We've been working on an alternative that right now we just use on fields that have a history of manure and legumes, sort of a two-step test. We run the test at six-leaf stage. If it's real low or real high, we can make a recommendation about whether we're going to get a response or not. If it's in between in that gray zone, what we found, if we wait a week, come back another leaf stage or so later and test it again, we can sort out most of those. And overall, on this type of site, with the manure and legume history, we can do almost as good a job with this as we do with having the high-end reference. I'm not as comfortable with it. It's not quite as nice, but it does give us another alternative. And I mentioned many of us are using the late season stock test. You know, we do all these things. We come up with a base recommendation. We run PSNT. We do all of our calculations and estimates. And then we can run the late season stock test to kind of get a post-mortem assessment of just how good did we do and use that information to feedback for in the future. Doesn't help us that year, obviously, but it may help us if we go back and look at our records to decide what we could have done better. And this has been kind of an eye-opening experience. This is some of the data from Pennsylvania over almost 1,700 samples over several years. Our optimum we're using is 700 to 2,000 parts per million on the stock test. That's that little green band down at the bottom of the slide there. The brown is just the distribution of those 1,700 samples. That's a little scary when you look at that, and you see how many of them are well above the optimum and how some of them we've got up there, you know, over 16,000 parts per million. We've got some work to do. You know, if we were doing a really good job, everything would be in the green bar at the bottom, but it's not. A lot of this is manure. A lot of these are, this test is being used primarily where we have manure because that's where all the uncertainty is, but we need to be able to do better than this. Just some variations. I've kind of given you Pennsylvania as an example, but just talk briefly about a few variations. Vermont, they do adjust their recommendations based on soil drainage, so they have different recommendations depending on whether it's a somewhat poorly over to excessively drained soils. New York uses soil properties to make several adjustments. They use it to as a basis for the yield potential. They have differential soil and contribution estimates depending on the soil type. They make a distinction depending on whether the field is artificially drained or not. If it's a poorly drained field and you put drainage on it, that's going to affect the nitrogen. and overall end use efficiency. So they have tables. This is just the top of the first table they have that gives all these characteristics for the different soils, and then that's used in there to make adjustments. They start out with a yield potential and then make adjustments based on these soil properties. Connecticut is the one in the Northeast that doesn't use a yield goal at all. They provide base recommendations based on some common cropping scenarios. You can see down here in the table, this is their at plant recommendations when they're going to use a PSNT. They always give a range, and you know, we've heard about in the previous two speakers, you know, that we can't really come up with an exact number. There is a range there, and then the farmer is to select from within that range based on things like prices, his hybrids, soil properties, and so forth. And then in Connecticut, again, they recommend using the PSNT, so then depending on the PSNT result, they'll have a side dress recommendation. Tom Morris in Connecticut and I argue a lot about this range idea that, you know, we all realize there is a range, but at the same time, you know, farmers want a recommendation, and you know, where do we draw that line? And I'll talk a little bit about that here in a few minutes. We're not ignorant of the yield-based recommendation issues. We know that uptake is related to yield. You know, that's pretty straightforward, but we also know that when we take that same data and look at economic optimum end rate versus that yield, there isn't really a relationship there. And it all goes back to, you know, the nitrogen cycle. We know what the crop takes up. We know what's in the fertilizer, but figuring out, you know, how all this garbage in between is going to affect all that is where the real challenge comes in. So we need to come up with ways that we can get a little more useful understanding of that. We understand the end cycle. We have modelers out there that, you know, after the fact, we can plug the data in, and we know it works. We know how it works. But it's like Yogi Berra said, predictions are difficult, especially about the future. And that's where we run into the problems. And this is just a little bit of data from one of Dick Fox's publications. It just shows some experiments he did at one point there, just showing the variation in soil and supplying capability. You know, even in this top graph where there was no recent manure legumes, just more or less in a continuous corn grain, we see a wide range in soil and supplying capability. Then we throw manure in here or legumes in, we get even more variation. So somehow we need to be able to characterize this. We've looked at the amino sugar N test, the Illinois test in the Northeast. Querying Ketterings in New York has looked at it and pretty much figured out by itself it didn't predict N response. But in regression work, if they add soil organic matter and the sand content, they were able to come up with a pretty good prediction of nitrogen response. So they think it does have some potential. In Delaware, Greg Binford looked at it. He found in the sandy soils in Delaware extremely low levels of amino sugar N. So just everything was, you know, down where it would say everything is very responsive. One of the things that seemed to show up there, and I'll mention in Pennsylvania also, is that it didn't seem to pick up the manure N. You know, it's very strongly related to the sort of the residual soil organic matter, but fresh manure N, it just didn't seem to be picking that up for us. So it didn't really help in predicting N response in Delaware. Tom Morris did some work in Connecticut, pretty much the same thing. We've done some work in Pennsylvania. When we did this, we ran nitrate on the same set of samples, and just at pre-plant nitrate was better than the amino sugar at giving us a prediction. Still wasn't very good, but it was better than the ISNT. And again, the problem seemed to be the manure. It just didn't seem to pick up the manure contribution. That was the frustration for us. It did correlate well in Pennsylvania soils with soil organic matter. But it didn't seem to want to pick up those fresh manure nitrogen contributions. So far in the Northeast, we were a lot of excitement about this test as maybe a way to get a handle on some of those processes in the end cycle that could help us do a better job predicting what was going to make it from the fertilizer to the crop, what we needed. But so far, hasn't really worked out all that well. John Schmidt in Pennsylvania has been leading some work looking at using the on-the-go sensors. We're using the crop circle sensor there to use an active reflectance sensor to look at the crop, kind of like the chlorophyll meter. And we've been able to develop some algorithms for making recommendations that with GNDVI and economic optimum end rate and get pretty good relationship. On these same sites, compared to the chlorophyll meter, the PSNT, or just our base calculated recommendations, this one gave us the best recommendations. Now, this is just one set of sites in central Pennsylvania, about eight site years of work here, but still pretty limited, but at least it's enough to let us think that there's some promise here that this may give us some help. Probably going to require a reference area. Basically, I think in our discussions in the Northeast, pretty much what we've concluded is that there's probably not going to be that one nice algorithm or equation or test that we're going to run that's going to give us the answer. It's really, we have the perfect out in making nitrogen recommendations. We can just blame it on the weatherman because, in most cases, if we could predict the weather, we could probably predict the recommendation pretty close, predict that economic optimum end rate. I think probably the best we're going to be able to do is some sort of successive approximations approach where we kind of make a guess and then use more information as it becomes available to make adjustments and refine that. So we may estimate a base recommendation just based on experience or field history or soil properties or maybe yield potential. Doesn't look like, as we all saw, that's going to be very helpful. Estimate some of those contributions we get from previous manure and legumes, and here having good records, having manure analysis, having our equipment calibrated, so we have a little more confidence in the information we're putting into those estimates. Maybe preseason testing, maybe the ISNT or preplant nitrate test, maybe a measure of some fraction of soil organic matter. Most of what we looked at straight or soil organic matter doesn't help us a whole lot, but there may be other fractions there, like the amino sugar fraction or something else we haven't even thought of. But maybe we can do some preseason testing. Generally, for us, manure is a big part of our system, so we're going to apply manure and maybe some necessary at plan N. We don't like to apply any more N than is necessary early in the season, both because it's not a very efficient practice, plus if we can wait, we can maybe make a better decision. Then at side dressing, we can just estimate additional needs based on the conditions so far. And I think from my experience with farmers, probably just delaying that decision making on side dressing, we gain as much as we do from just the physical benefits we get from side dressing. Just knowing what the weather is, knowing what the stands are, those kind of things. So even if we don't do anything else, just delaying the decision seems to help. But we also, if we delay, we have the opportunity then to use things like PSNT, chlorophyll meter, active sensors, whatever. And then we can use that late season assessment to give us feedback. Too often farmers, they do all these things, but they don't really have a good way to get feedback. How did it work? If the crop looks good, it's going to look good whether you put twice as much on or the right amount on, and that's a problem with most of the assessments we do. And then use that with our records to make refinements in the future. So I think that we're probably just going to see a successive approximation where if we put some manure on, and if all we're going to do is do an at-plan estimate, we realize there's going to be a wide range in variation, uncertainty and how much we need. Usually we're going to choose something near the top of that uncertainty range, and then a lot of cases this is a big problem, we have insurance on top of that, particularly with manure. We make a recommendation that already covers most of the variation, and then farmers want to put some more on just to be safe. If we can just wait to side dressing, put our manure on, put a little bit of nitrogen at planting, wait to side dress time, we can get a little, narrow that uncertainty down a little bit. Still significant uncertainty there. Still a lot of guys put some insurance on. If we can wait to side dress and then use something like a PSNT, put a little bit of nitrogen planting and then use that, we can get the variation down more. So if we just keep using these tools, sort of go through successive approximations, we hopefully can get us down to where we're within a reasonable amount of variability for a recommendation. So just to summarize that, you know, we need to make some kind of empirical estimate of economic optimum end rate. We need to make adjustments, particularly in our system. We have a lot of manure and legumes. Probably putting on minimal planting time, side dressing, using the tests where we can, do that end of season assessment, and then keep records and make refinements is kind of the where our group and our discussions is heading with the approach to making nitrogen Northeast. If I have time, Dave, I'll answer questions.
We do. We have about 4 minutes for questions. So questions for good.
Any rebuttal from my co-authors, too? Yeah.
All other things being equal, how much more efficient is sod dressing than pre-plant in your area?
Well, one of the things that we've looked at, for example, in yield, I know Dick Fox, he went back over, you know, just before he retired, he was really into summarizing. That's great because he went back over a lot of work. We saw basically the difference between side dress and that plant was a 9-bushel advantage over about 25 years worth of data. Some, you know, much higher, some much lower, but we were about 9-bushel advantage, the same amount of nitrogen. All these were comparisons where everything was the same. So that's kind of what we're seeing. And side dressing's been pretty widely adopted in Pennsylvania. I think farmers are recognizing that efficiency. Yeah.
What about the change in fuel prices? How's that going to affect the economics of it? My gaze in the crystal ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue. You know, if you talk about making multiple applications across a field, things like that, that's got to be part of the economics. People are asking a lot more questions about things like urease inhibitors, nitrification inhibitors, and, you know, ESN. All these things are getting a lot more attention as ways to maybe use some of that technology instead of multiple applications to try to get around this. I mean, it's a great time for us working in nitrogen to try to get farmers to thinking about it a little more in depth, because the prices are there, it's got their attention, and, you know, and I think the best we can do is just to get them thinking about it instead of just tell me the number. Well, let's think about it a little bit. Think about your situation. That's what we're really trying to work on. Tom?
The figure you showed for the end of season nitrate. Variability among the farms and fields. But I know the test itself is fairly high standard deviation. Is the optimum range based on the standard deviation of the test? Or how far above that optimum range are you really going to be to save yourself in a serious problem?
I don't know the answer to that, Tom. I mean, I know if I'm up to 10 or 15,000, I'm probably way over what I need. And we don't get into arguing too much, you know, if you're a little bit over 2,000, but I think it's we'd like to see in that 700 to 2,000, that's a pretty wide range to begin with, you know. So it's not like we're expecting farmers to be in a couple part per million range there. And most of this is just we have too much manure, and that manure is being put out there, and that's why we're seeing these levels. And that's where we've really seen the biggest benefits from things like the PSNT, is not to make recommendations but to convince these guys that we're putting all this manure on, and plus putting, you know, 50 pounds of nitrogen fertilizer on, that they don't need that 50 pounds of nitrogen fertilizer. They're still putting too much manure on, but at least they're not adding the fertilizer on top of it.
Cool. Thank you, Doug.